Our discussion tonight, and it is a discussion, we're not going to do a lecture, is service and the community and the workplace. And it was very interesting to us, to show you how retired we are, that it wasn't until Phil had remembered somewhere along the line, and I thought of it on the boat coming up, that we hadn't, in all the discussions that we were doing, this 10 series discussion, we had never yet included the workplace. That means that we don't have one anymore, I guess. So anyway, we put it back in, and I'm glad to see a few people here who I suspect are still in the workplace, which is great, because I think that that's definitely a part of the thing we want to discuss. So first of all, what we want to start out with is for you to tell us all, what does your community physically look like? What kind of a community do you live in? Is it an urban setting? Is it a suburb? Is it a hamlet? Is it Holden religious community for a period of time? What kind of a community do you live in right now? Or are you on the road? We have one couple on the road.
If you live in a motorhome, don't tell us.
Yeah. Well, I live in what we call West Valley community of Yakima. It's broken up into different areas. So downtown Yakima, East Valley, West Valley, Lower Valley, and I live in the West Valley area.
Okay.
Are those communities quite distinct as far as their
complexion? Yeah, because everything west of 40th Avenue is classified as West Valley. And we're all the avenues. And East Valley are the streets, and they go from 1st Street, 2nd Street on up to the end of Terrace Heights, which is...
Rose, does your community have a shopping center and
yes.
all the facilities?
Yes.
Okay, so would it be like a small town almost?
Almost. Our West Valley area wanted to, it lost. But they were wanting to incorporate into a city of our own.
Uh-huh.
But they only did it once and it failed. And they say that a lot of times it will fail the first time. And it, because we have our own school district, we have our own fire department.
And then you could spend a year or so arguing about what the name is going to be.
Well, probably West Valley, I don't know.
John, what's your community?
Flagstaff is just recently been classified as a city because it went over 50,000, but it would definitely be a small city.
Okay.
And it would not be connected to any urban center.
Okay. Behind you, what does your city look like?
I would say it's unincorporated county.
Okay. So is it rural? Or suburban?
Yeah, rural.
Rural, okay.
Do you have to go out of your area to do your shopping?
You can get groceries there and a few essentials, but not shopping.
Yeah.
Okay. And Erling, you can choose which of your two.
Scottsdale, that's urban.
Okay, urban, all right.
More than enough shopping.
Okay. People will come to our community and say, how can you stand it? There's no mall. And we say, that's why we're here. Okay, what in the back there?
Rural suburban.
Rural suburban, okay. Next.
Rural small town.
Okay, what size?
Probably 1,000. And I live out in the country on the lake, and there's farms. But at least 50% of the people drive into North Minneapolis suburbs for work.
Okay, so you really are a suburb, aren't you?
Do you have your own gas stations and church and grocery?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
A fabulous meat market.
Ah. Okay, next.
People comes from miles around for it.
Okay, next.
The Holden sweats t-shirt?
Urban.
Urban?
Okay.
All right. How about the rest of you here?
Urban, but kind of a broken part of Portland, Oregon, where in the southwest part of the town, which is kind of the hilly part, so we're not where all the growth is coming in, and we're not all the nice cross streets and, you know, for building that kind of stuff and everything. So it's kind of interesting right now.
So you're in a really settled part, and it's not experiencing growth.
Right.
Okay, that's important. We may run out of felt pens here. No problem. Okay, Holden Community, right?
Yeah. Okay. What would you call Langley, though? Would that be?
Langley would be a small town.
Artsy, touristy.
Yeah. Yeah, a tourist destination.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Rural, suburban, in danger of becoming urban.
Rapidly growing.
Yeah, what I wanted to put here was city. If I put old, would that be okay? You guys know what I'm doing there? Okay.
He told me that I always talk first and I can't this time, so.
Oh, all right, Ron, where do you live?
We live in a mature suburban city under 25,000. I think mature is the word here.
Right.
Surrounded by water.
And has no opportunity to grow much more.
Thank goodness.
Now, I was just going to call it urban suburban with a small town flavor. You understand that, Lola, right?
Right, it is. Mm-hmm. It is. Used to be more so, but has maintained some of it.
Yes, where you meet people on the streets, no matter where you are, and you know a lot.
You know a lot, right. Okay, now what would you say are some of the strengths and weaknesses in your community?
Why don't we go in reverse order?
Okay, weaknesses first. Well, I'll just make two lists here.
Well, people, excessive affluence.
Okay, is that a strength or a weakness?
Weakness.
Why would you call it a weakness, Ron?
Excessive weakness. Excessive affluence, rather.
Yeah, it puts
people plus. It's beyond the ability to cope with it, most people that have it.
Where the affluence causes the destruction of quaint homes to put up mega houses?
Mm-hmm. How about quaint values?
That's true, too.
So, eroding values, is that high-priced houses? It's all
No. It's much more insidious and destructive than that. That's just a ho-hum. People want an 8,000 square foot house and a 10,000 square foot lot. I mean, it does everybody, you know. But you know, this is where Hawaii in January is more important than going to school. This kind of thing for the kids. And where kids with Mercedes going to high school is more important than the courses they take.
Mm-hmm. All right. Affluence and diminishing values.
Okay. And people that are very judgmental, though.
Yeah. Yeah. We lived there for 29 years.
Diminishing social values and personal values rather than property values.
Yeah, property values.
Yeah, that makes it very. This makes a very interesting.
35% this year. Yeah.
A very interesting community for a church to function in.
1 year.
And a very interesting community for to call a pastor to, as we went through several times. Jake, we didn't get your. We'll put you with Warren and Sonia on the road. For your town at the moment, is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ours is different from any of those described, I think.
Okay.
We live by a lake, but our town is about 12 miles away and it has all the shopping that we need.
Uh-huh.
But our church is in the country, and our mailing address is rural. We live in the woods by a lake.
So you're in rural, but you're not really rural country or rural suburban.
No, not really.
Okay, but you're sort of rural.
The town we go to is about 8,000, and it's a cherished area. Mm-hmm.
300 some people in the whole township.
So here, we could probably put you in there a little bit.
We've got a community.
Yeah. How about the Portland area? What kind of strengths and weaknesses? Now, you have a mature community.
I would say the lack of a community feeling.
Oh.
Everybody just kind of does their own thing and goes about their business and doesn't know their neighbors that well.
Okay. Any strengths there?
Well, the access to so much. You know, whether you want the arts or the zoos or various things.
Okay, access to amenities?
Yes.
Such big words.
Sounds impressive.
Sounds like a real estate pitch.
Have you been at Holden Village long enough to be able to think about any of the strengths or weaknesses yet?
Community?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I can give you one you're going to feel sometime during this year.
Turnover.
Insulation.
Oh, yes. Well, I was actually thinking more about Langley. That's
okay.
The space I'm still in,
yeah.
I guess. Our strength, I guess, is absence of fast pace. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a weakness for some of the youth because they don't know what to do with themselves. Mm-hmm. And it lags behind the pace of the rest of the world.
That's why a lot of people our age move there, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
but that could be a weakness for the youth.
For youth.
And uh-huh. The way everything else is.
Okay, who's next?
Traffic.
Okay, that's a weakness or a strength?
It's a weakness.
Getting to, it's a strength for Mercer Island because it takes 7 minutes to get downtown. Yeah, but it's a weakness for you.
Congestion.
Bridges. Okay. Oh, look, that's not on the right. Traffic is the word I want, isn't it? Okay, who else?
How about a plus for those? Negative, an offset to those negatives of Mercer Island would be constructive power brokering.
Explain that a little more, Ron.
Well, all the bad stuff on the right there up above, you could turn that to advantage. You could make all kinds of things happen with enough affluence and influence.
So you have political clout.
Well,
that?
It could be political or it could be lots of things.
Okay.
The power to get things done.
Okay. Okay. Who else?
Well, in our rather rural, small town area, which is at the top end of a county, it's getting better, but we have a hard time getting the county seat to bring services. We pay the taxes, but it's very hard in a split county to get the services uniformly distributed. So they tend to be clustered where the government is. So it's a definite problem.
Okay, how about Scottsdale and Flagstaff?
The West Valley area has a tremendous school district.
Huh. All right. That is a real plus, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
We know most of our neighbors, and there's always somebody to call on for help.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We could call that community networking, but
yes,
let's call getting to know your neighbors. No buzzwords allowed. Okay.
Probably a weakness is that we have two different school districts and two different fire departments.
Fractured services. Well,
forced urbanization.
Forced.
That goes under weakness? No.
You bet.
All right. It's a long word.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's when you have a large plot of land that one person owns the greatest portion of it and has a vote of a yes to have this be staying as a rural area, and the other people have no's, and they can somehow mix this up into a question that people are so confused they end up voting for something that they don't understand, and all of a sudden you've got a urbanizing of it, or another situation where we have going right now where a school bought farmland and they need services in order to have that school be built in the area. So they just simply are going to have a peninsulization of the services out to that area, and the people along that must pay for that.
People who thought they lived in the country who all of a sudden find they're surrounded by malls and housing developments. Those two or three of you who are in real urban areas.
Yeah, the arts for Scottsdale.
Yeah. Okay. So this one.
Right.
Okay.
And like the traffic for reliability.
Okay. All right.
We're at that urban.
Yeah. How about you, John?
I think our size is unique, and not unique, but very advantageous to us. We're just at that place where you can do a lot of community building, a lot of community activity and strength, but it isn't so big, it isn't so small that you would have resources. I have noticed some smaller cities around us that are struggling, and some bigger ones that don't get, you know, they don't see each other, don't talk to each other. So size is a strength.
Okay.
And weakness, I think, is that when you live in an attractive area, you get lots. Well, let me put down weaknesses: low wages for blue collar. Have a lot of motels that pay very low wages, and so we have very high cost of living for them, for those people, houses especially.
This is one, that particular one is one that you're going to find a real problem in anytime you have a tourist destination spot too. Mm-hmm. And you also have the seasonal work, which brings people in and then people leave. Okay, this is starting to look like a lot of different communities, but maybe that a lot of these communities have a number of the same kinds of problems. Any controversial areas that are hitting your community at this point? What's the most controversial thing going on in your community?
Well, with ours, the city of Yakima is trying to annex further out into the into our area, and this is what's causing us to want to become a town of our own, is because the city keeps wanting to annex parts at a time.
Mm-hmm. Taking away your right to self-government.
Right, right.
Okay. Who else has a hot item going on?
Immigrant labor in the Christmas tree area.
Immigrant labor would be one, and the Christmas tree is the other?
Because of the Christmas tree growing.
Oh, for Christmas tree growing. Right, okay, immigrant labor. Okay, that could go in a bunch of different areas, couldn't it?
Yes. We have a couple. There's a lot of people want a public pool built in one of the major parks, but that would entail a lot of tax dollars that not everybody wants to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like small, heavy thing. But that's, it's like.
Mm-hmm. But it's very real to that community.
Front page on in our newspaper. Uh-huh. And then another one is a resort that they want to build in a lot of our woods area.
Okay.
And there have been a lot of actions taken towards preventing that, but some people are for it too. So
I'll see, why don't we put resort versus environment? Is
yeah.
that
yeah very
yeah okay. Any other hot controversies?
Mass transit.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I think the whole growth, slow growth, fast growth issues confront our city, growth issues.
Okay. Yeah, there's more.
Not that it's not going to grow, but just how.
Yeah, how. Right. How fast and what's going on. We have kind of an unusual one in our area.
How do you spell skis?
Who?
Two eyes?
Yes.
Skis.
It's a personal watercraft.
Yeah, PW. What's it called, Jeff?
PWC.
PWC.
Jet skis.
Yeah. I think it's two eyes.
Legally, it's a personal watercraft.
For those of you who are against jet skis or personal watercraft, our county will probably take it to the Supreme Court for all of you. Any other hot controversies going on? These are pretty good. It's enough to take us on. Okay, Bill.
I'm going to read something like from our theme book.
Oh, just a minute, wrong then.
Yeah. Liberal activism in a conservative majority setting.
Okay, that one we could spend a week on.
That's a plus, you say.
I didn't say that.
Liberal active. Okay, go ahead, Don.
This, our theme book here, has a good discussion on community, chapter 9, page 120, if any of you have it. And it's by Larry Rasmussen, who has been, you know, a high-profile person here at the Village, and is now at Union Theological Seminary. The shaping of communities is the practice by which we agree to be reliable, personally and organizationally. This practice takes on life through roles and rituals, laws and agreements, indeed, through the whole assortment of shared commitments and institutional arrangements that order common life. In one sense, then, shaping communities is not just a single practice of its own. It's the practice that provides the choreography for all the other practices of a community or society. So, what does it take to make our community work well? We'll open that up for discussion. What are the things that seem to be on your mind about items that really are key to make a community work correctly?
Compromise.
Okay. Compromise, indeed, you do have to have compromise, yes.
What are some of the things you have to have in place?
Call it infrastructure.
Infrastructure.
Clear communication methods.
Okay.
Good, that's one.
The fire alarm just went off. What does that, we have to have?
Fire
department.
Water. Yeah. Police.
Education.
Mm-hmm. Help say medical.
Medical. 911.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Several of you mentioned schools as being a plus.
Diverse opportunities for involvement.
Mm-hmm.
Law
and employment. Okay.
What about some of the things that we talked about as amenities? Arts, culture.
That's what sometimes people think we don't need.
Nearby.
Hmm?
We have a ski hill nearby.
Mm-hmm. So recreation.
Yes. How about churches?
Okay. We're here at Holden and at the last thing we know is the churches.
Mm-hmm. Places of worship.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And space.
Space.
You know, people, when they build new cities, don't leave enough space for parks and open space.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's very important in communities and cities.
Mm-hmm. Okay, under the broad heading of recreation.
Yeah. Well, and just sometimes.
Space, yeah.
Yeah.
There.
If you don't have space, it's hard to have recreation.
Yeah. I think community traditions are important. Mm-hmm. Have a sense of pride in your community and to have events that bring you together year after year to celebrate your community spirit.
Have you read the chapter?
As Erling would say in his lectures, you just took my next point.
Just going on our own area.
So very good. Okay, we've pretty much gone across the waterfront of the things that are crucial, are mandatory to have in a community that really works. But what about the people? What are the roles of the individual citizens? What are the roles that make the cohesiveness of a community.
Motivated toward excellence?
I'm sorry?
Motivated toward excellence?
Motivated toward excellence. Act very good. I almost said excellent.
So someone, how would that come about, Ron? Would that be leadership?
How would it come about? Could be fundraising, it could be developing activism, active participation. It could be bringing in experts from outside to supplement the available local talent.
Okay.
High standards, or creating high standards.
Warren?
You know, one of the things, when I mentioned space, not exactly reparation, but, you know, like some places when you say traditions and so on, you know, if the space doesn't have sidewalks, then people can't gather around in public spaces in the midst of the community, so people can come down and relate rather than far off shopping center. So if people don't know each other, you know.
So like the village square?
The planning of the community helps that take place where, you know, what you're talking about. So traditions and the getting to know one another really takes place.
It's almost an identification as a community. But what kind of people?
Let's go back to some of these roles. Go ahead.
I was just going to interject, but I think my own experience is that I recognize that even I recognize where I live. One thing I have in common with a great diversity of individuals is that we share common values. I mean, core values, and maybe different colors, might come from different countries, might have different languages, but we all have children, pretty much. We all care about the block we live on. We all want our children to be able to play on safe streets. And as a result of that, you're willing to take a stand and take a risk to get to know your neighbors.
So
to get to know your neighbors and organize block watches.
So common values in your community is a real strength.
It's becoming a real strength.
Right.
The block is organized and cares about. In my block, when we have problem children, adults come out and say, stop, don't disrespect our block. Our block put up a basketball hoop on a telephone pole for the block. You know, we care about our block and our community, and it starts with caring.
Somebody had to have the idea.
So you had, somebody had an idea there that
first,
was an idea.
First there was a motivation that Ron said.
Well, I don't think God had the
idea.
Then
he had to have someone with an idea.
But it came through some person.
Or a lot of whole different, you know, what
so
George
leader.
Bush said, there are 100,000 sparks of light in our country. I don't think anyone is privileged to a idea. If God gives an idea, there might be a couple hundred million people that catch on to it, and they may think it's their idea, but they look around in this beautiful world and see that a whole lot of people are thinking the same way.
That's one of the fun things about Holden, is you raise something and say, oh yeah, we did that, and then they add something else on, and pretty soon people can go home with even better ideas than they came with.
It's funny how we rediscover this, though, because I think of an era when I grew up in a town I grew up in. Basically, it was more than my parents that watched me. And I think that was an era where I wouldn't dare tell somebody on the street something because I might get shot.
Well, you got to take.
You know, I mean, somewhere you got to take a hold, but the whole culture seems not.
Three summers ago, a young black boy got shot in the arm. He was bleeding an artery.
Yeah.
He came to my house because I was the only one that came home that early in the afternoon. I grabbed his arm, put my hand on it, and called the police. It never occurred to me I might get AIDS. Not, I didn't, okay? But it never occurred to me not to help the guy because he was black. this young 14-year-old boy that got shot had blood squirting out of his arm, and he didn't know what to do. You know?
It's a good thing you were there. But there is risk in community, isn't there?
You take a stand. Yeah. You live on a block and you say, I'm not going to let that happen here. And you'd be surprised if you ask. If you get to know some neighbors and they care about their children, and they say, I don't want cars speeding, I don't want people breaking bottles, I don't want that neighbor to be selling crack. And I'm going to say no, you know, and you take a risk and you might have a few problems, but is it worth it for your children's sake? I think it is.
So you're saying, like the Bible says, be a neighbor.
We have values. Yeah. We all have children. Yeah. We all care about them. Right. If you've got somebody on your block that doesn't have the same kind of values you do, get rid of them. You know, because they're unfit parents, more than likely. They're drug users and they're not working.
Ron,
you know?
Yeah. I wonder, as a gentleman, whether you family values is synonymous with common values, or whether we have two different concepts represented. Would you buy your family values in lieu of your term common values, or do you mean values that may have nothing to do with the family?
Well, it sounds like they're holding values such as safety, such as respect for other people. Those would be two I heard you saying.
When I said values, I meant Christian.
Yeah.
American values, Christian core values, not Norwegian. American constitutional.
What I'd like to have us do is to get from what you're talking about. That's okay. Is a block, and how do we repeat that block into a community, which is a bigger entity than I think we're. What I would like to have us get to, if we can, a little bit. Some of the things that Phil and I thought about, and all of this may. You may have a role in a community at one time, and another time you may have another role. And that's the thing we really want to get to, is what is our roles in these communities. But some of the things that we came up with, and you can certainly add on to this, is leaders, doers, visionaries, supporters, and doubters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Does that sound like a good start?
Yes.
For us to work on? Okay, so why don't you go on to this?
Okay, we do want to focus on your idea about the things that bring a community together.
Yeah.
Events, or in one case, Warren mentioned, like a focal point for the community. What kind of events?
And you were talking about community occasions that gets the community together.
Community festivals.
Festivals, right. One of you was.
The rodeo.
Okay.
In central Minnesota, which is really strange. I don't know how that ever came to be, but the rodeo.
Okay.
We know there was the central fair, which is made up of 4-H.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right, county fairs. They're, in our area, that's the absolute best thing in the world. Yeah, and Christmas tree lighting. That could be controversial.
You know, in the town Public Parks did movie night, and Hyde Park every Tuesday night. So the kids and the families in concerts. So the kids and the families would go to the public parks every Tuesday night and meet and have movies or a concert and popcorn and everything for the families.
So it's regular. Constant
schedule. That's right. Mm-hmm. Every Tuesday night.
Better than once a year.
That's right. Yeah.
Sponsored by the community.
You know, the community.
Or the university.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess.
We have a couple of things. We have a festival called Chuchokum every year, where a bunch of artists come and sell all of their work. And there's a lot of music and food and mm-hmm. dancing. And something that's been going on in our community for a long time. And another thing is the Hearts and Hammers program that we've had going on for a long time, which is just where the community gets together and focuses on areas that need work, whether it's repairing a roof or, Esther up the road, or cleaning up the parks or something. They work in different areas each year.
It's a neat name, Hearts and Hammers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back here?
A couple of thoughts. One of them, as Debbie was mentioning, I think in terms of community events, something we started 15 years ago in our community is a Labor Day parade. Mm-hmm. And unlike a lot of Labor Day parades, which focus on labor, and that's fine, and they do sometimes take on a somewhat partisan political character, this parade was basically a community parade. Mm-hmm. It started out to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the city, and we invited people from schools to churches to neighborhood organizations to participate. This year, we had the 15th of them. We had 120 entries registered. Mm-hmm. Ranging from the grade schools, public and parochial, half dozen bands from area high schools in the greater metropolitan area, to a group, a kind of a motley crew of fellows called the Spring Hill Poker Club, who always gets themselves dressed up in some kind of drag outfit and does it. They're all people who are in their late 40s and they know better, but they just have a good time in this parade and everybody gets a big mood out of it. But you'll have 10,000 to 12,000 people that will line the parade route and watch this parade go through the area. It's a great community celebration. Everybody has a wonderful time. It's for the entire family, parents through children. And that kind of an event is that you get a group of people who can organize it, put it together, get some city support, and that can make it happen. The second thing that I would strongly suggest is, kind of relates to what Adam was talking about, the idea of neighborhood organizations. Grassroots involvement is very much an emerging phenomenon in local government, and more local governments are responding to that concept of grassroots participation. In our own city, we've seen a couple of organizations, one revolving around a historic area called the Broadway Historic Area, that focused on historic preservation of older homes, and others that came to revolve around the issue of crime and wanting to solidify the neighborhood against crime. Whichever the cause may be, and of those or any of the range of others, getting the neighbors involved and then lobbying your aldermen and your city government to support neighborhood organizations through city programming and city planning can be a good way to structure that kind of grassroots participation and give it longevity so it survives beyond the immediate crisis of a shooting that may have occurred or a preservation of a particular building or buildings that may be the rallying point for a historic area. What winds up happening is that you have the city working in tandem with the neighborhoods, and you have a very strong dynamic that's set up that can allow for a lot of good community participation, and in turn can foster something that I would just push very strongly, the concept of community. I think one of our great weaknesses in our society today, because of the greed mentality that was fostered so much in the 1980s, you know, the greed is good, is the necessity of going back to the focus on community and the need to be as concerned about your brothers and sisters, your neighbors in the community, as you are about yourself.
Well,
it's not popular right now, but that's something we need to be focusing on in our local governments and all the way up to the top. And I think these are methods in focusing on that grassroots. You take involvement, you take responsibility for each other, and you can start building community.
Great. Someone had a hand up here.
I was just going to mention, sometimes a project that is deemed really worthwhile will really vitalize the community. Our community of about 7,000 decided that we needed a Boys and Girls Club because there was nothing for the kids to do. And within about 2 years, they put together something that involves about 500 children, and the community has raised over $500,000 for it. And is now looking forward to building a clubhouse for the Boys and Girls Club. So if you you know, have the right kind of people who can tread carefully and diplomatically through some of the really hard parts, then that will mobilize a great number of people. People who need this for their children will come out of the woodwork and help. And so you enhance your pool of doers, and they see success, which is wonderful. As soon as the community sees success like that, they're able to go on to something else without fear. So it's very inspiring when you see a small community take on a big project.
You hit on a good principle about the scope of the involvement. It's important. You mentioned that also with the parade. How many people are involved, then that's what brings a community together, not just the event itself.
Erlen?
Yeah, I was going to say the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and St. Paul have been very successful ones. Take Back the Night
especially inner city people and women, with marching at night, saying we have a night to ourselves and not give up the night. Those have been very successful.
And that's throughout the country, that has been a very good effort. Well, one of the things that we wanted to talk a little bit about is leadership, because you all and we all may be called on to be leaders at one time or another, but even if we aren't, we still pick or choose or elect leaders. And I think maybe it would just take a moment to think about some of the things that make a good leader. There's a woman by the name of Sheila Murray Bethel who's written a book called Making a Difference. And she lists 12 qualities that she feels are important in a leader, and just see how these fit in with what you would consider good qualities. She said, leadership is not something that you learn once and for all. It is an ever-evolving pattern of skills, talents, and ideas that grow and change as you do. The first quality she lists is has a mission that matters. 2, is a big thinker. 3, has high ethics. 4, masters change. 5, is sensitive. 6, is a risk taker. 7, is a decision maker. 8, uses power wisely. 9, communicates effectively. 10, is a team builder. 11, is courageous. And 12, is committed. Now, all we need is about how many million people are there in our country of that? Which means all of us, right? Fit into that category. But those are some kind of actually very good kinds of qualities that I think that, and leaders, how many of you have been in a group where a leader just kind of evolves? And sometimes they turn out to be good, sometimes they don't. Yes, John?
One of the things that's happening many places, but I know it's happening in Arizona, is a program they've identified 40 values that they want high school kids to have, not all 40, but if they could have, say, 20 of those values. I'm not sure the numbers here. But they've identified these values, and there's a program to help schools and churches to help the children to grow into those values and to identify them. And so we are a Lutheran church and an ecumenical group in Phoenix is just on the edge of beginning to promote this. I don't know how it's done, I'm not sure, but its value growth.
Assets, isn't it?
Search.
Term assets that are using?
Assets.
Yeah.
Because it's all over the country now.
Yeah, it's all
right.
Coming out of Minneapolis.
Coming out of Mertstrom's work in Minneapolis.
So that's building community.
That's a very positive move, that whole thing, in my book anyway. Just one other thing I'm going to say about leadership, and that is there are many times it's just as important to be a doer or a follower. And Sonia and I talked about, we've been folding laundry. It's so pleasant to just stand there and fold laundry. It's just, you know, there's times when I am very happy to have somebody tell me, this is what needs doing, here's the stuff, go do it, and I don't have to do anything but what they tell me. But there's other times when you can't take that role. There's other times when you do have to be a doer, as Adam was. You do have to take the initiative and hopefully, you know, get all these little 12 steps in line and do what it is it needs doing.
Usually it starts with the visionary. And if you don't have some sort of a goal in mind, not much ever gets done. And there are some, you know, pretty impressive examples of visionary. And in the Seattle area, some of you who are familiar with that area know of an attorney named Jim Ellis that seemed to mobilize thought to clean up the polluted Lake Washington, to establish appropriate transportation system in the city, to set up swimming pools in various parts of the community for community use, and many other things. The person who sparks the thought to get something done, and then has the capability of being an enabler and a motivator to get people to work towards it and actually carry it off. I think of my lovely wife here as being one of these people, and she has done quite a number of visionary things in the community on a smaller scale. Various community organizations, counseling, agency for the aging, and all sorts of other things, which I won't embarrass her to tell you. But there's risk involved.
Yes, your friends start to say, now what do you want?
Yeah, right.
So a visionary has to be also a risk taker. And every once in a while, you got to stick your neck out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you got to have a thick skin because people will snipe away at you. We noticed that our lovely Mercer Island, where the James lived, when we first moved there, you mentioned some good thing for the community. Everybody leaped on it and supported it. And as it got bigger and bigger, and the community got bigger and bigger, these concepts would bring naysayers out of the community to find fault and wonder why you're doing this, what's your motivation. And there was a lot of suspicion. Not that these things don't sometimes get done, but not as easily. At least this is what we saw.
It sounded like that.
The sad thing, for every Jim Ellis, of course, who's a unique individual, as we all know, you've got thousands, millions, probably in this country, 75 million couples, parents, adults, who don't have to have that level of vision, but they have to have enough vision to see those attributes in terms of what they want to see happen with their kids. Mm-hmm. They want success, they want health, they want happiness, they want security. And such a nominal increment of help to those kids by those two underlying parents, as visionaries for the elements I've said, for their kids alone, mm-hmm. the collective groundswell that would bring up, you could obviate everything we've talked about. Everything.
This was our
back to family values. Right.
This was our Friday discussion, Ron. I'm sorry you weren't there.
Sorry.
Because the other thing that we included in that what's the quotient was grandparents, who are also becoming a very dominant force in the country. And you're right. But it takes good families, and then it takes the grandparents, the extended family, and then it takes community. So it takes all of it. And the family has changed a lot, which can be a factor. Do others of you have visionaries in your communities that seem to have this ability to be able to pull things off? Okay. How about the doubter? How does the doubter fit into the community fabric?
I would think that if you have a bird brain stunt that somebody brings up, the doubter will pick a hole of it.
I think so too. I think we need them.
A useful function at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Not the perpetual dollar that doubts, you know, everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got some of those.
There are some of those too.
But I mean, an honest.
Yeah.
You know, to list label everybody's against everything, you're going to do as some kind of a wacko.
Right.
You're going to end up with some disastrous things, and they may teach you something. Yeah.
John, you were saying about Flagstaff that it seems to be a city at this point that is able to get things done. And I wonder if, I have not been a student of cities, and probably Erlen could speak to this, but I wonder if there is a point in cities or towns in which things seem to be able to happen. We were a new community. We were able to get things done. And I don't know if there's a point of no return or not in this kind of thing, but community can sometimes do things and sometimes not. Go ahead.
I was going to say with Scottsdale, it's quite unusual. They have a leader, their Herb Drinkwater, who could just get things done.
Yeah.
He just couldn't. And everybody liked him. Mm-hmm. He died last year, but he was mayor for 18 years. Mm-hmm. And he was just extraordinary. So that was the vision of leadership there with him.
Yeah. Right?
And now it's back to name calling and from all the rest of the town. So that's the developers and homeowners and like.
I think the thing that I've noticed in the leaders that, that I've been exposed to is that their ethics are so high, they really can't be challenged.
Yeah, that was that, for sure.
Yes, John?
I think there's a, we need to understand that it doesn't require a great number of people to be visionaries and leaders.
Right.
It requires some, and maybe even a few. It's a God-given gift that we either accept or we reject. We either go with it or we hide from it, but some have it, and if they step up, you just need those. Then you have other people that need the help.
Right.
Yes. I think another important thing, though, I'll brag here for a minute, my husband's been involved in local politics for most of his adult life, is having that leader who has the vision, but then being able to communicate that vision to other people that don't have the ability to maybe see the big picture right away. Mm-hmm. And then once the idea is communicated, then to draw on the talents of other people within the community that can help make that idea become a reality.
Right.
And that's a real skill. It takes a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. So that's how you get more people involved that can bring ownership to an idea or a project to make it happen.
Okay. Somebody has called them the bridge people.
What kind?
Bridge people. You know, the people that bridge the ideas and the mission to the community. And every mission or every vision area group needs a bridger.
Yeah, okay, from the idea to the doing.
To communicate that to the public, because the public has confidence in the bridge person.
Right.
Okay, we'll come to the zinger. How do we as Christians approach the whole concept of building community? What are the things that we are called to do? How do we respond as Christians? I mean, obviously this is complex, but what's on your minds about this feature?
I think you start dealing with our own family.
Okay, family first, okay.
Okay, you and Ron are in the same.
However, that entire community affects your family, right? What happens to the family next door affects your kids.
It takes a town to raise a child.
Okay.
A village. Well, I know I was close. It takes a village.
A certain amount of social discipline that's necessary to have a society.
You're right.
But and that has to be inculcated somehow or another, and I'm not sure if that isn't a...
How do your churches address this? How does the church address your community? Gosh, it's silent all of a sudden.
Mostly silent.
Mostly silent?
Churches have a role in the community and should accept that role. And how they do it is just, of course, up to the community, the needs, but they have a role in the community.
Okay.
They're not leeches, they give back.
Well, one thing churches do is they make their people who go to their church hopefully want to do that, to be part of that community.
Yeah. Our church makes the building available for community things.
Okay.
There's a nursery school and there's voting and there's the...
It's one thing to initiate, another thing to support.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ministry of the laity is important so that we don't exhaust all of our people just doing things at the church, but we see that I'm always excited when I hear that one of my members is on the recreation board or the PTA or something, or one of the social food kitchens or something. I say right on.
Right.
That's good.
Do your churches have strong social ministry committees?
Yes.
Yes.
Is it really active? I mean, I know.
Yes.
You folks do Habitat?
We do Habitat, we do food banks.
15 years of emergency feeding.
We do overseas support.
The kids go to Mexico to build homes.
Great. Okay. So that works two ways. The people that get involved become strengthened and oriented to service so that they can go on and do other things, like for instance the teenagers when they get to be adults.
I think it's important that you teach it as
it's
to the
teaching.
Children, getting the children involved so that they grow up expecting to serve. Volunteer.
There's two things we'd like to leave you with on this particular part, and that is, where would you like to fit in your community, and how would you get there? And I think we should leave that just as open questions, because I think, again, this is what Holden does to people. It makes them come up here and think about their lives and what they're doing, what they're going to do when they get home besides open the mail. And, you know, what do you want to do in your community? How can you make your community a better place to be? And how would you go about doing that?
I'd say one thing is to focus on one thing and do that well instead of many things. There's many people to do many things, but where we can burn ourselves out and become discouraged. And so I think it's rather to focus on an area of ministry that you, I think you ought to see it as ministry.
Yeah. I do too. And in your book, I highly recommend the book. Saying Yes and Saying No is a really good chapter, as is discernment on that. Okay, how do we?
Just a second with the churches. I wrestle with this all the time. You know, the doers. We did Habitats, fed the poor, and all this stuff, and we were so proud of ourselves. But, we wrestle with the point of taking vision in the community, redlining for the poor that they didn't get housing in certain areas, and all that stuff, the migrants, how they were treated and so on. You know, there's got to be advocates for those people. And it's easy for a church to be a doer rather than say something, what's going on in the community. And we wrestle with that. And it's takes a lot of courage as a people of God to be advocates for the other people. And I think that's one of the places I wrestle with the idea of belonging to a church and just being a doer.
Yeah, because if a church becomes too much of a doer, often it'll split that church right in half, because the other half doesn't particularly want to do what the doers want to do, which can often happen too.
Well, we have only a little time left, and we haven't hit the workplace yet. So we'd like to raise the
just
pressure.
Real quick. How does the structure of the workplace differ from that of the community?
Profit-centered versus people. I was going to say workplace should be people-centered too, but in reality, the community is far more people-centered than it is profit-centered.
You have a very different chain of command, don't you?
Many times the task is more important than a relationship, where in the community maybe the relationship is more important than the task.
Well, that's a good thing.
Think about it anyway. I'm not saying one is not important, but your relationship.
Can you think of some instances in the workplace where your ethic situation might get in the way of the task of the work? Your CEO says you will do, and that doesn't necessarily jibe with your own moral code or your ethic conduct. Yes,
I was in one position where I was told your job is more important than your family.
Okay.
Medicine is getting to be a major part of that role.
Used to be worse.
It was reverse.
Okay, Erling.
I think, was it the Mitsubishi plant down near Chicago where they had the sexual harassment thing that went on with the approval of the administration?
You could repeat that over and over and over.
That is a diminishing situation. You're getting more of a national set of business ethics all the time, driven by the larger companies that can't afford the bad press and the big settlements boom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's filtering that. But that other by itself is something that doesn't. That's not a village in the sense of
no.
Trap.
No, this is a real workplace thing where your livelihood.
It's a tabernacle.
Yeah, your livelihood is challenged from time to time. And how do you, as a Christian, stand in that workplace setting? We've had, you know, horror stories all over the place, from the environmental horror stories to every other kind of horror story that can occur from the workplace. And how do you handle that?
In addition, you have the whistleblowers. Should you blow the whistle in a bad situation or not, it may jeopardize your job. How staunch are your ethics? How staunch are your Christian values? Are you willing to lose your job over this? Anyway, we thought that we had raised these issues, and if we had a lot of time, we would discuss them, but we are going to have to get ready for our worship tonight. And tomorrow, we're going to be talking about another facet of our lives, and that's the political aspect. And we got a surprise for you tomorrow.
So we're going to go from this hotbed to a hotter bed, okay? So we'll see you all at 10:30 in the morning for a little hot discussion of politics.
Yeah, I'm not going to work. I'm going to come here.
Okay, sorry we couldn't finish all, get answers to all of this, but I don't think that's what we're here for.